From Genetic Engineering and Biotechnology News, this is the GenCast Network. Bringing you compelling and in-depth interviews with the biotech industry's leading researchers, newsmakers, and thought leaders. This week on the GenCast Network, Dr. Bruce Rittman from the Biodesign Institute at Arizona State University is interviewed by Gen's editor-in-chief John Sterling about using microorganisms to help solve the world's energy problems.
Dr. Bruce Rittman is director of the Center for Environmental Biotechnology at the Biodesign Institute at Arizona State University. His research is geared toward developing microbiological systems that capture renewable resources and minimize environmental pollution. Dr. Rittman, thanks for joining us. In the August 6th issue of Nature Reviews Microbiology, you and several colleagues published an article on microbial ecology and sustainable energy. Let's begin by asking why you believe bacteria are one of the best hopes for producing renewable energy in large quantities without damaging the environment or competing with our food supply.
Well, the first thing about the microorganisms is that they're very small and simple and robust. They're organisms that have what we might call low overhead. And so because they're simple and have low overhead, they can live in all kinds of environments doing all kinds of metabolic activities that are completely impossible for a big organism like a human or a plant to do. So they can do all sorts of interesting metabolic reactions that in many cases turn out to be really useful as a service to human society. And in particular, we're talking now about the service of providing renewable bioenergy.
Your article discusses two distinct but complementary avenues to using microbes as energy sources. Would you discuss these two approaches and the associated energy applications?
Now, the first approach uses microorganisms to convert the energy value of biomass into something that is useful to society. Now, we have a lot of biomass that goes unused in human society now, things from residues of agriculture, waste products from food manufacture, growing animals, even human waste like sewage. Most of this material is waste material now and actually troublesome. But that material contains a lot of energy in the organic matter. It's just that it's energy in a form that we are not able to use. It's what I call inconvenient energy. But microorganisms, certain groups of microorganisms, will, as their natural lifestyle, convert that inconvenient energy in the biomass into something very convenient for human society to use. The three great examples of this are producing methane, which is natural gas, or producing hydrogen gas, which is another wonderful energy source, or third is producing electricity directly. As we call this a microbial fuel cell. So these are all groups of microorganisms that live by changing the form of the molecules to produce these end products. They gather a little bit of energy to grow themselves, makes them happy. And we get the bulk of the energy out as either electricity or as hydrogen or as methane. So that's the first approach, taking biomass and converting its form. Now, the second approach is to use microorganisms to create high-value new biomass. And I emphasize the word new biomass here. So one of the problems we have today in our society is that we use a tremendous amount of fossil fuels, oil, natural gas, coal. And we would like to replace those with other forms that give us the same services, but it's so much. And there's not enough biomass around through the things I just talked about to come close to replacing all of it. So we need to create new biomass. And we need to do it in a way that doesn't mess up the environment and doesn't destroy the human food system. So microorganisms can do this. In particular, we use photosynthetic bacteria or photosynthetic algae to capture the energy of the sun. They use some CO2 and some nutrients, and they grow. We then harvest these microorganisms, and we have new biomass. Biomass hasn't existed on the Earth before because no one was doing this. So we take this new biomass and we extract out high-value energy products. We can, and some organisms have a lot of lipids or oils. We can make things that are the equivalent of petroleum. We can use other parts of the microorganisms as biomass to make the methane or the hydrogen or the electricity, as I discussed before. So the key here is to use photosynthetic microorganisms to capture sunlight energy and convert it into themselves, which is a very high-value source of energy. Now, the great thing about this is they can do it at a very high rate. They capture sunlight energy, convert it into themselves at rates orders of magnitude higher than plants do. Plus, they don't grow in soil. They don't compete with our crops that we use for food. So we have renewable energy at a very high rate and without causing disruptions to the food system or other environmental damage that can be associated with very intense agriculture.
The millions of bacterial species on the Earth would appear to provide engineers with a plethora of opportunities for energy applications. But you wrote that this biodiversity also presents some considerable challenges. Please talk about these challenges.
What we're doing in these systems is what we call managing the microbial communities. We want to have the right organisms doing the right reactions so we get out the right energy products. And we don't want to have competing organisms that don't produce the right products or other organisms that consume the desired products and so we can't get them. For example, if we're trying to produce hydrogen from biomass, we don't want having in our system other organisms that quickly utilize the hydrogen and basically steal it from us. So we have to manage the community so that we have the right organisms and not the wrong organisms. So the challenge is to ensure that we have the right organisms doing the right things and to know it. And so our article that was in Nature Reviews Microbiology was focused a lot on the tools that we use to determine what organisms we have and do we have the right organisms, and that, in other words, are we successful at managing these microbial communities to get the right organisms and the right reactions.
This leads to one of my next questions. Could you address the importance of the genome technologies and other molecular biology techniques as they relate to the choice and use of bacteria for energy applications, just what you were talking about? And which specific technologies are the most promising, and what significant roles do these methodologies play here?
Yeah. So what we're using with these technologies is we're using them as investigative tools, detective tools. We want to know what organisms are present. We want to know what those organisms are doing. So we're assessing who's there and what are they doing. So we have a whole range of genomics-based tools that allow us to answer those questions. And so it's a little bit like, you see on the CSI and things, where we're using the genetic information of the organisms directly to figure out who's there. Who did the crime? Well, we don't have crimes, but we have who are the organisms present and what are they doing. Now, this gets back to one of the very first things I said in our talk today. I said, remember, these organisms are very simple. They're very small. Therefore, you can't really just look at them and identify who's there. They all look pretty much the same under the microscope. They're not that big of the differences. They're not easy to differentiate. So our only choice to know who's there is to directly interrogate the genetic information of the organisms. And this is what we do. Some tools we call, in the broad sense, pre-genomic tools. They're used to identify what organisms are present by looking at the sequences, DNA sequences, in certain characteristic parts of the DNA. We have another large suite of tools that is called, in a broad sense, post-genomic tools, and that uses information to help us detect what enzymes the organisms are producing. The enzymes, of course, are the molecules that catalyze all the reactions. So if we know what enzymes they produce, we also know what reactions they're likely doing. So we use these tools all based on interrogating the sequences of the DNA in the genome.
some of these tools, can you describe what specific techniques, like, you know, PCR, what do you specifically use?
Okay, so PCR is involved in a lot of the tools. And let me describe one that we're doing a lot now that's a very powerful tool in our setting. And these are tools that we call fingerprinting tools. Now, keep in mind that in a microbial community involved in bioenergy, there are maybe hundreds or thousands of different microorganisms in there. And most of them, we don't really know who they are beforehand. So what we will do is we will use the PCR technique to amplify certain regions of DNA. Now, amplify just means make lots and lots and lots of copies. Now we've got a lot of DNA. We then take those copies of DNA and we can separate them out by different chemical or biological techniques and separate them so we can see which ones are which. We can then take the information for the separated molecules. We can sequence them and figure out what organisms are there. So we're able to fingerprint a community to identify the organisms that we know, or we can identify organisms that we don't know who they are yet, but at least we know they're there. So we have these tools that all rely on amplifying or making lots of copies of specific regions of the organism's DNA. So this is the most widespread technique we use. We use it all the time. Another technique we use, which is not so widespread but is just emerging, is to take the protein products, which would be, for example, the enzymes, and use mass spectrometry to figure out what they are, and then we can begin to understand what enzymes are being produced and therefore what reactions they're doing. That's called proteomics.
Now, you have this broad diversity of microorganisms and these genomic and other microbiological tools. What's the main key to large-scale success in microbial bioenergy?
Okay, so the most important thing is to be able to manage the microbial communities, and to manage the microbial communities, we need a system. It's an engineered system. We just don't throw them out into the pond and hope that the right ones grow. So we create engineered systems. And I have a little phrase I used for this. We create systems that work for the microorganisms so that they work for us. All right, so we have to create an environment, a controlled environment, so that the right organisms are present and thriving, and they're doing the reaction that we want, for example, in making hydrogen or methane or something like that. So the real key is in creating an engineered system to manage the community. The organisms are out there for the most part. We can find them. We now have to create the system so that the right organisms are doing the right job.
My final question, you are the director of the Center for Environmental Biotechnology at the Biodesign Institute at Arizona State University. Can you tell us about the mission of the institute and your center?
Yes.
And please discuss the range of activities and research projects taking place at the institute and again at your center.
Okay, so the Biodesign Institute at Arizona State University is about 4 years old, and it's a new research institute that was set up to allow us to do highly interdisciplinary research that is directed towards finding solutions to society's biggest challenges. So we do what we call use-inspired research, research to address big problems of society. We've been talking about sustainable energy here. We have other research projects among our research themes among our centers that have to do with water sustainability, develop diagnostic methods to detect human diseases and therapies to prevent human diseases. We also have work on sensing the things, for example, in security things, looking for agents that terrorists might use to terrorize us. So all of the research here is use-inspired towards these big goals. It's also highly interdisciplinary. We have 10 centers that cover all kinds of special skills. In my center, we're dealing with microbiology and engineering. We have other ones that are dealing in vaccines, mass spectrometry, protein chemistry, and a bunch of other ones. So we're set up to allow us to do highly cooperative interdisciplinary research so that we can bring together teams of people that can address all the facets of really tough problems like like I'm talking about now. So it's designed to be youth-inspired. It's designed to be interdisciplinary. It's also designed to allow us to do big things, not just little single investigator projects, but big projects that allow us to really make a large impact towards solving these big problems.
I'm John Sterling. Thanks for listening. If you would like to comment on this week's podcast, please go to our podcast section at www.genengnews.com and give us your thoughts. We'd really like to hear from you. Bye for now.
To learn more about topics discussed in this GenCast or to listen to previous GenCasts, visit our website at www.genengnews.com. New GenCasts are posted every week, Thursday, 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. For the Gen Publishing editorial staff, I'm Jonathan Ellinghouse saying thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in again next week to the GenCast Network.